19.
3.
Where we kick ass.
2. 1.
Hello, Sequoia. I'm Noel Wright with Lila Stewart, and we're hosting today's podcast. How's it going, Lila? And who's in the studio with us today?
I'm doing really great, Noel. I'm thrilled to be a host of today's podcast. It's going to be a great episode. With us today, we have Mr. Yuki Demers, an animator for Netflix. How cool is that? Thanks for joining us today, Yuki.
Thanks for having me.
So, Yuki, before we learn about your profession, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? We hear you're Mrs. Welch's brother-in-law, so can you tell us if she's as cool off-campus as she is on-campus?
I think she's cooler. She's pretty cool. I mean, if she's really cool here, then she's even cooler at off-campus. She's a good aunt and friend, known her for a while. And I remember when their first daughter, my niece, was born. I look at pictures, and she sends pictures of that all the time, and we constantly send pictures of all our babies to each other and get sad, and but then we have fun times too, you know. She's great. Okay. She always has good tips on pretty much everything.
Oh, nice.
Like, oh, you're going here? Make sure you do this. Like, we just did a Disneyland trip, and she had all the tips to get to the front of the line and, you know, what to go, where to go first and all that fun stuff. So
cool.
She's great.
That's awesome. So I'm guessing that when you were younger, you liked to draw. Did you have many opportunities in middle school or high school to pursue that passion, or did you have to wait until college or art school?
I did love to draw, and I did not have the opportunities. My mom is from Japan, and she was very adamant that I do something with science or math. You know, that like I was supposed to be an engineer or a physicist, and my dad is a physicist he worked at JPL for a long time. He's like a literal rocket scientist, so the standards in my household were very high. And drawing wasn't, I mean, it was like, hey, it's fine as a hobby, but it wasn't considered something that I could do for a living. I think part of that was just ignorance. And the other part is just parents wanting, you know, the best for their kids and, you know, a secure future and a stable job, you know, that sort of thing. So, you know, I drew all throughout school, probably when I shouldn't have been drawing in my sketchbook or in my notebooks and the margins and all that stuff, drawing my teachers' faces in funny ways, that sort of thing. But yeah, I didn't know until basically 2 years into junior college that, you know, drawing could be a path to a career. When I took a figure drawing class, I was taking a bunch of like engineering, calculus, and computer science classes, and I didn't really enjoy it myself. And just on a whim, I said, oh, you know, I really like to draw, you know, when I was in high school and in middle school. Maybe I should just take, like, a figure drawing class or an art class or an illustration class and see how that makes me feel. I was kind of in a searching phase, you know. So I took a figure drawing class at Moorpark College with a professor named Cynthia Minette, and she was great. And she noticed, just like, hey, you're actually kind of good at this drawing thing. You know, have you ever explored careers in drawing? I said, oh, no. I'm going to be an engineer. I'm just doing this for fun. And so she connected me with another teacher at Moorpark College who had gone to this school called Art Center in Pasadena. And he was a potter. He did a lot of ceramics. But he had gone to Art Center and studied illustration before that. And so I talked to him, and he showed me this book that the school puts together every couple years where they'll choose a story, you know, like Little Red Riding Hood, or in this case, this book was called The Skillful Huntsman, and they take kind of a fable or a fairy tale, and they'll have students illustrate and design, you know, parts of that, they'll do their own take on that story, so, and then they put it all together in this big book, and it's really inspiring to see all the student work where they're doing awesome, you know, sci-fi versions of the story, or like medieval versions of the story, and you see all their takes on what the characters could look like, or instead of in the sci-fi version, instead of having a horse, he has like this cool, like, you know, cyberpunk floating motorcycle thing. And I saw that book and I was like, oh, I want to do that. That's what I want to do for a living, you know? And then, so I made it my goal. I switched majors in Moorpark College. I think at that point I'd already been at Moorpark College for like 2.5 years. So, I made it my goal to get into Art Center and pursue a career in art. And, yeah, it was kind of funny. It's the hardest art school to get into, and it's also the most expensive school in the country. You know, I told my parents that, and they were like, okay, so make sure you apply to other schools, maybe some state schools, you know, just in case you don't get in. And so I told them that I applied to 4 different schools, but in reality, I only applied to Art Center. And I was lucky enough to get in, and then that's where I went to school and discovered that doing art can be a lucrative career.
Did not expect that. That's very interesting.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we have a great art teacher, Mr. Dean, and Ms. Stevenson also covers 2D and 3D design in her computer class. Generally speaking, what kind of career paths are available if you're an artist or interested in design?
I mean, there are a ton. It depends. It depends on, I think it's kind of the one career path where you can go into it and then you can choose where you like to do your art. You know, there's all sorts of disciplines that I work with, right? So, and there's all sorts of things that I have to do, you know, that kind of go outside of what I'm comfortable with. But for instance, you know, some people will go to school and study graphic design heavily, and they will become graphic designers. But then in my line of work, it's like we don't necessarily hire people that are specifically graphic designers, so we all kind of have to be graphic designers on top of being able to draw characters and sets and color and do all the paintings and stuff. But occasionally, if you're on a project that has a decent budget, you can actually hire a graphic designer to do all the graphic design or do a majority of the graphic design. But yeah, so it's like, you know, if you're into drawing, or if you're into graphic design, like there's a path forward with that. I've had friends who get into, you know, get their foot in the door at a studio doing graphic design. And then they're like, hey, you know, I've always been into drawing characters. And they're like, hey, let's see your characters too, you know, and they get an opportunity to do that. But yeah, and then there's all sorts of other things like, you know, editing. We had a team of editors on the last project I was on. What else? Oh yeah, composers, music. I'm good friends with the composer of the last project we were on, and I play a lot of guitar, and he's still joking that, like, I need to come in and do a guitar part on one of the the next tracks that he does for a show, because I sent him a video. I did the theme of the last show that I worked on was called My Dad the Bounty Hunter, and I did the theme, but I did like a metal version, and he loved that. So yeah, I kind of forgot the question, but hopefully that answered what it was.
So I know you mentioned graphic design. What's the difference between graphic design and what you do?
Sure. So we can see here, the listeners won't see this, but in this painting that you guys have up, the graphic design portion would be, I would design kind of the graphics, like the signs, the signage you see. I design it all flat in Photoshop, and then I set up my painting, I paint all the buildings, and then I start to place in perspective all of the signs that I've designed. And in some cases, you know, we'll do like a graphic design blitz, so we'll have the team just go for like a week and design as many fake kind of billboards as possible. And in this case, like the Bid House sign I didn't do, but someone else did that. I think Alberto Mielgo did that. And you can kind of take, and we'd make these big kind of sheets in Photoshop documents where all these flat graphics in posters and fake, you know, soda ads and fake makeup ads and whatever you'd see in Times Square, where I could just grab and cut and paste them into a painting. But yeah, that's the graphic design portion. So it's more of like the logo design or kind of like putting fake newspapers together. Like I had to do a newspaper that said that announced the death of Spider-Man, so I had to make a fake newspaper, and I wrote a fake article about a hamburger restaurant in there, and hopefully maybe some people could see, but it's in the movie for so short that no one's ever going to see it. But that's sort of the graphic design side, and then the other side is the more like drawing and painting side. So on this painting right here, I was working over a storyboard. And so I'd paint in the car, paint in the character, paint in everything basically in Photoshop. Like, and you do it how you would do it traditionally, you know, how you would, if you're going to do a painting, but you have a lot more freedom. I don't know if you guys played around in Photoshop, but you have unlimited chances to fix something. So, you know, if you're painting in real life and you mess up, there's only so many ways to fix it. But the nicest thing about Photoshop is I can keep trying. And I've always said to, you know, when I used to teach to my students that I'm not a good painter, I'm just very patient, and I have a lot of time. So, yeah, that's what's nice about Photoshop. But if you're working traditionally, which they used to do a lot, you have to be a lot better.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah. That was a really good scene in the Spider-Verse movie, by the way.
Oh, yeah. That one was cool. That was one of the original artists on the film. He took a trip with the first director to New York. And I remember seeing this reference footage of so they took a reference trip, right, where they would go to New York and they're taking photos of all these things, because one of the things that they wanted to do with this film was make it really kind of true to New York and feel as gritty and detailed and like almost realistic, but in a push stylized way. And I remember I found this reference clip, and it's the director, and you see him, and he's in the driver's side back seat of a cab driving through Times Square, and you just hear him saying, like, "What are you, crazy? What are you can't put that out there." And then you just see from the camera point of view, like, the other guy, Alberto, was holding the camera outside of the cab, just like you're seeing in this photo or in this painting here. And he's like dangling this camera outside of the cab going through Times Square. And that's kind of where the reference for this shot came from. And I think in the film, you see one of the Spider-Man, Peter Parker, the one that dies. I call him Perfect Peter. He's like swings down and then he jumps over a car, and this is where he kicks off the cab, right?
I remember the Perfect Peter in my book.
Yeah?
I remember that.
Oh, Perfect Peter was the blonde Peter that dies in the beginning. Sorry, yeah. Spoilers.
No, for a movie that's been out for like 5 years.
Yeah, and now the second one's coming out in June.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when did you decide you wanted to be an animator? Did you know that's what you wanted to do from a young age, or how did you make that happen?
Well, I definitely didn't know I wanted to do it. It took a lot of time and a lot of convincing. Actually, when I told my parents that I didn't want to be an engineer and that I wanted to pursue a career in the arts, my dad didn't take it very well. My mom didn't take it very well either. I think my mom said it's better than a psychology degree. But at first they were just nervous that I would be struggling the rest of my life, but then they kind of came around, and when I told them, you know, I want to go to the best school in the country, I want a real shot at this, they kind of came around and they were more accepting of this career path choice, but I didn't know until later in life. I didn't know until like my second or third year of junior college, which most people don't do 3 years of junior college, so I did a lot of majors changing, you know, from physics to engineering to computer science, and none of it was really, it wasn't something I could see myself putting, you know, 40, 50 hours a week of my life into and be happy. So kind of just made the choice to pursue what would make me happy. And yeah, mm-hmm. And here we are.
Do you have a favorite animated character or comic book character? A little birdie told us you have a pretty impressive action figure collection.
Yes. I have two. Spider-Man is kind of the second, but my favorite all-time character is Captain America.
Solid pick.
Yeah. And I have two Captain America shields. And my office used to be inside the house, not in the garage. And when we found out we were having a second child, my son, we just kept my office essentially the same, except we took out the desk and put in a crib, because it has all sorts of Captain America shields and framed Captain America comics on the walls. So my son was born into a Captain America themed room, and the funny thing was we didn't change a single thing.
I can sense the Marvel from here.
Yeah, he has a cool, like Captain America rug that's like a giant version of a Steve Ditko cover.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's awesome. But yeah, no, Captain America. And then Spider-Man, which is great because then I got to work on a Spider-Man film. So,
congratulations. It's coming full circle.
Yeah.
What a coincidence.
Yeah.
So we wanted to be prepared for today, so we looked you up online. Your website lists art direction and visual development. What does that exactly mean?
So I guess visual development is just another way to say, like, concept artist. I don't know why it's called that. It's just different. I don't know. But, yeah, it's essentially, I don't know if you've heard of what a concept artist is, but a visual development artist is essentially a concept artist in the feature animation realm. So a typical day for a VizDev artist might be, hey, you know, your production designer or your art director, which are the leads of the art department, they might come to your desk, or during the pandemic, they might hit you up on Slack or call you. They say, hey, you know, there's a scene where a character chugs a whole bottle of water. We don't know what that water bottle looks like, so can you design that for today? So that would be your job. And I guess I should take a step back. Everything you see in an animated film needs to be designed literally from the street to the sky. So it's the job of a team of VizDev artists to design everything you see on film. We don't get anything for free in an animated world. Whereas if you're shooting live action and you're doing a live action film, you do location scouting, and the sky is probably the sky on that day. And you know, if they find an old hotel that they need to shoot in, like, they'll just find an old hotel and rent it and shoot in there. But in an animated film, you have to design it. You have to design it in 2D, 3D now a little bit, and then you pass that on to the production studio, whoever's making it, and they'll build a 3D version of it, and then they'll light it and put characters in it and animate the characters and render that out, and that's what you see. That's the final film.
Very cool.
What does an art director do? An art director guides the team and makes sure the vision of the director and the production designer is being achieved or is happening, right? So they're more kind of day-to-day on the ground with the artists, whereas the production designer might spend more time with the directors and the writers and the producers to kind of come up with the plan for what the film will look like.
That's very cool.
I've had to explain this to my parents a couple times, so that's in practice.
From one person to another.
Yeah.
So, your artwork on your website is amazing. What software do you use? Or do you freehand first on a tablet or something, and then you use a software?
So, that is all, so it's all freehand on, I use a Wacom Cintiq, and it's kind of like a giant iPad. It's a 32-inch tablet screen that I can draw directly on. And, yeah, so I use that, and then I use Photoshop primarily to do all my paintings and designs in. I experimented once with, like, I think Corel Painter back in the day, but it's not as useful as Photoshop. The one thing, I did use it on the Emoji Movie because Photoshop didn't have this feature that I use a lot when I'm doing character design, but there's a symmetry tool. So when you're drawing a character head on in Photoshop, you can basically just draw half the character, and you're good. But Photoshop didn't have that until about 3 years ago. So I use Corel Painter sometimes to draw characters, and then I'd put those into Photoshop. And then usually if I have time, if it's like a really big painting or a really big design or like a heavy concept that you're dealing with that you have to do a lot of thinking, I'll just use a sketch pad and go outside and draw, you know, with whatever I have and sketch out ideas, because it's kind of a double-edged sword. Because Photoshop is so editable and there's so many ways to fix mistakes, sometimes you don't commit to ideas. So for me, I can get more ideas out on paper, and I just keep moving and I keep thinking on paper, essentially. Whereas if I started in Photoshop, I would continually tweak my drawing and fix the perspective or fix, you know, this little thing here and there. But if I'm drawing with ink on paper, that is the idea. And if it's not a good idea, I'll see it. And if it is, I'll look at it and I'll say, oh, maybe this will work. And then I'll develop that further either on paper, or I'll take a photo of it with my phone and put it into Photoshop, or I'll just look at it and redraw it in Photoshop. But yeah, it's a lot of drawing.
I didn't know you could use Photoshop for that.
Yeah.
It looks more like an image editing software than an image creating software.
I mean, that's what it was designed for originally. But people started, and you know, if you're touching up a paint or a photo, right, it's like, oh, there's a blemish or something that we wanted to hide, or, ooh, the sun was a little harsh, can we take the exposure down, that sort of thing. That's what it was designed for. But in building those tools, they kind of accidentally created a digital painting platform. So, yeah.
Exploitation is beautiful in this way.
Yeah.
Ms. Welch told us that you're an animator with Netflix. On the daily, what does your job there look like?
Yeah, so I wrapped at Netflix a couple weeks ago, but the project that I was working on at Netflix was a series, an animated series called My Dad the Bounty Hunter, and it was the first time I got to production design something. So most of my career I've spent as a viz dev artist or a concept artist, but this was the first time where I was, you know, I got the opportunity to lead the art team and come up with, you know, what the show is going to look like and kind of lead the art team with an art director, Alex Konstad, shout out to him, and kind of design the entire show from script to what you see when you watch it on Netflix. What did my day-to-day look like? It was very, very different than what I was used to. My day-to-day as a viz dev artist, my day-to-day as a concept artist is usually I wake up, I go to work if we're going into work, or I go to my garage if I'm going to my garage, and then I have my assignment that I was working on, and I just put on music or Seinfeld, or you know, a movie or a TV show, and then I just start working. I start drawing or painting or whatever I need to be doing. Kind of the nice thing about viz dev and concept art is, you know, you can do a lot while you're doing it, you know. I can listen to a podcast. I can, you know, watch my favorite movie. And it gets weird. Sometimes I'll, like, put a movie on and I'll mute it and then I'll put music on. But it's part of the creative process. Like, one of my favorite things to do is I'll put on, like, the first Incredibles and I'll mute it and then put on, like, I don't know, my favorite album. And if I need to hurry up, I'll put on different kinds of music, you know, like if I really need to get into it and like lose myself in the painting, it's metal. If I need to relax, reggae, you know. But yeah, so that's kind of your day-to-day. Your day-to-day as a viz dev artist is great. You just kind of zone out and paint and you do your job. As a production designer, it's different every day. You know, a lot of days are just meetings all day, talking to directors, talking to the writers, talking to the showrunners about what they want and how we could achieve it. Part of the job as a production designer is to come up with kind of the theory behind the design. So one of the things that our production designer on Spider-Verse came up with was, you know, we want Brooklyn to feel really warm. And so we lit and we colored all of those shots with a really warm palette. And the idea was to train the audience into thinking or into feeling like when we're in Brooklyn, it's warm, it's home, it's comforting. And then the opposite happens when we go to Manhattan, when Miles is kind of thrust into his into the story here and he's not in his comfort zone. Everything is cool. There's a lot of neons. There's a lot of chaotic light, that sort of thing. So that starts as just an idea in a room, in a conversation, and then that idea is then disseminated amongst the art team, you know, either in a big, you know, team-wide meeting, or the art director will be like, hey guys, so we're doing warm for Brooklyn and cool colors for Manhattan. So yeah, a lot of my job was spent in rooms with printed out scripts, writing notes in the side of the margins, and or maybe doing little doodles, or, you know, I have another sketchbook that I would do a lot of like planning. So that's the other side, which I think the other side of being a production designer, which I think my experience in more kind of math engineering based, you know, endeavors when I was in school helped out with, which is like, okay, we only have this much money and we have a chase sequence through this underground tunnel system. How do we make it seem complex, but we can only build two parts of the tunnel and just repeat them over and over again? So my job that day was to literally draw a map with elbow curves and straights of tunnels and figure out how many pieces of tunnel we're going to have to build and put together and how we can reuse those pieces over and over again and reset dress them with different props and make it feel like different parts of the tunnel. So yeah, my day-to-day, it could be meetings, could be drawing maps, planning, meeting with our 3D studio, our vendor studio, which was in France. Or it could just be like, I have to do all those things and also have to design, you know, part of a set or do color keys for a sequence or character designs or prop designs. Kind of my point of view on production designing is that, you know, I have a lot of bosses that do a lot of the work themselves and they take all the good, juicy assignments and they're like, oh, yeah, so we have this whole set where, you know, the rhino is going to fight whoever and... but then he knocks over this, like, trash can. Can you design the trash can? You know, so for me, I think it's great to give the team, like, the big assignments. And I just focus on the macro and make sure they know what they need to design and how it has to feel, what color it needs to be. And then I'll take kind of the crappy assignments. Like, I'll design the trash can, you know, because I have an hour between meetings, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Man. When you're working on a project, do you get to use your own ideas or are you working off of someone else's design or storyboard?
It depends. It runs the gamut from we have no idea what it needs to be, we just know it needs to be blue, to it's a Fender Strat that is missing a string, like very specific to, you know, if you're doing a guitar design, very specific to, you know, no idea. So it just depends. And it also depends, too, on where you're at in production. On Spider-Verse 2, the first year of development was, we don't know what the story's going to be, so just do drawings and paintings of things that you want to see in the movie. And that's, like, the dream assignment, right, where you just go home and you're like, all right, I want to see this robot in it. I want to I think the vulture should be in it, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, those are really fun. But then... now I'm actually back on Spider-Verse 2, and the assignments are super specific. Like, oh, they go to this new world, and we need fake ads for their Times Square. Like, design those fake ads. Yeah, sorry, spoiler there.
Nah, it was probably in the trailer.
Yeah. But, yeah. I don't even remember the question.
You're already here first, folks.
Excited for that movie.
Can't wait.
Yeah. No, it should be good. Comes out in what? In June?
I think. I'm pretty sure.
We're still working on it. Yeah, so right now the assignments are pretty crazy and they come in pretty fast and they're due really soon. So I have a lot of deadlines. And instead of just loading us up on like one assignment, I have like four different assignments that I'm doing at the same time. And when one is like kind of in a place where I can show directors, I send it, and then when I'm waiting, I start working on another one. Yeah, it's kind of funny. There was a painting teacher that we had at school, and he was he had really, really bad ADD. And he told us that, you know, when he was working as an illustrator, his main career before he became a teacher was he was an aircraft illustrator for Boeing. So he'd work with the engineers, and they would paint out and design aircraft or spaceships. But they couldn't do it in 3D, so he would sketch it out, and he would paint it, and he would do these aircraft illustrations, and he'd work from home. And he said his attention span was so bad that he would start four paintings at the same time, and he had a big house, so he would put four paintings in four different rooms, and he had all of his paints and his brushes on, like, a tray with wheels, and he would just go from room to room throughout the day and work on four paintings at the same time. So I feel like I'm doing the digital version of that now.
It's an interesting way to do designs.
Yeah.
It's coincidence.
Yeah, for him it was walking from room to room. For me, it's just like switching between Photoshop files.
Oh, man, I got to do this, then this, then
yeah.
this. So what was your favorite movie or TV show that you worked on or are working on?
It's got to be Spider-Verse.
Yeah, I kind of saw that coming.
Well, you know, I actually, Spider-Verse and then my dad, the bounty hunter. I think it's the first time I've been, you know, been able to lead the art team. And so a lot of decisions, you know, that are not even art related, I had a say in, you know, things as simple as like, how are we going to do meetings? How are we going to run meetings? How are we going to check in with the artists? You know, artists are they can be a sensitive bunch. So even things, you know, I mean, I guess maybe I'm kind of new school in this way. The school that I went to was started by a bunch of Marines. So it's one of the harshest, you know, learning environments you can be in. To the point where, like, I've seen people quit, you know, like, just drop out after having a really bad critique. And that's kind of the environment that I was taught in. And, you know, like, for instance, we first semester, you have to take a class called Head and Hands, and it's all about drawing heads and hands. And it's so rigorous. One of our assignments is we get a plastic skull, and we have to sculpt all of the facial muscles onto the skull. And we had to line them up in class when we were done. And the teacher would walk down the row of skulls, and he'd push skulls off the table that weren't up to the standards.
Oh, that's got to hurt.
And he would say, oh, if your skull's on the ground, pick it up and go home and try again.
That's rough. Harsh.
So that was kind of the culture and the environment that I learned art in. And a lot of that translates. A lot of the old school guys like operate their teams that way, and I don't think it's great. So this is the first time that I was able to like dictate how we're going to critique work, how we're going to review work. You know, and we were in the middle of a global pandemic, and I think for me, adding more stress to people's lives was not something I wanted to do. So I did a lot of things differently than how I, you know, what I had experienced in previous films. So in previous films, you might have a check-in with your art director, your production designer, twice a week, three times a week, four times a week. I actually never checked in with my artists. I only would check in with them if they asked for it. And I would give them their assignments Monday morning, tell them what I needed to see and when it was due, and then leave them alone. And I think they appreciated it. And it actually saved me a lot of time because I didn't have to go look at something every day that's in progress that's not ready to be seen yet. And just outlining clearly the goal and the deadline at the launch, I think was the key to that. And then just trusting that they'll do it. You know, and it's very easy to tell if they're not doing their assignments because, you know, come Friday, they don't have anything. So, but thankfully that actually never happened. But yeah, no, that was really nice. So getting to affect change in the culture of how the show is run was great. Which is, I don't know if that's kind of a weird answer.
So we noticed, well, I guess you already kind of answered this question. It was if you were working on the sequel to Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
But without giving us any spoilers, what would be, like, your favorite part that you're working on, I guess?
I think it's the... So I worked on that movie three separate times. I started on that movie in 2019, at the beginning of 2019. I worked on it in development for, like, a year. And that was really, really fun because it was... There's no story yet. We just kind of know that we want this to happen, but we don't know who the villains are going to be. We don't know where they're going to go. We're just kind of exploring. So, you know, do what you want. So,
be like, we need a villain.
Yeah, no, so one of the things that I was like, all right, cool. Like, I want to see a cool version of the Vulture. So I pitched a couple versions. I pitched a Native American Vulture. I was watching a lot of Westworld at the time. I pitched like a Native American Vulture where he's like There's I don't know if you guys read a lot of comics or Spider-Verse or like the Spider-Man comics, but there's a version of Spider-Man who's in like the Old West named Web Slinger. And I was like, oh, maybe we can go to the Wild West world and there's like a Native American vulture, but like in this world, he's the good guy, and that, you know, his land is being taken from him. And so he like manifests the vulture spirit and becomes like this cool vulture warrior. And then I also pitched another version, which was like kind of like a Da Vinci Renaissance era vulture, where he's created like a vulture suit, but like made of like Da Vinci era, you know, designs. You know, so I don't know if you've seen all the Da Vinci sketches of like his flying machines and that sort of thing. So I pitched that, and it actually made it into the film, which is really cool. But I also pitched there was a villain named the Spot that I thought was weird and cool. And his power is essentially in the comics. He can take a spot. He kind of looks like a man-shaped Dalmatian with no facial features. And he can take a spot off his body and, like, throw it into the air and then create a portal to another place. So there's a really famous comic book cover with Spider-Man punching the spot in the chest and then his hand coming back through the spot in the spot's face and punching himself in the face. So... I thought with dimensional travel and all that stuff in the first film where all the characters come to our world, like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if there was a guy who, like, could make portals to other worlds? So that little pitch that I just drew turned into something bigger, and they're like, hey, that's kind of a cool idea. Like, let's go forward with it.
I did not even know that guy even existed.
Yeah, no one did. He's a pretty obscure character in the Marvel, like, Spider-Man world.
Need to read up on my comics more.
But yeah, and then I came back kind of a couple years later when they were in production to do some freelance for them. One of the things that they liked that I did on the first one was I was pretty good at coming up with like weird fake posters for the world. So like, oh, we need like a take on like what would this world's Avengers look like, or what would this world's like Coca-Cola brand be, you know, and I'd come up with something. Or like one of my favorite ones from the first film was in Miles' world, there's an old car company called Yugo, which was like a Soviet car company, and they went out of business because, like, one, they were made horrible cars, but two, I think they died with the Soviet Union. But anyways, in Miles' world, I was like, oh, maybe Yugo survived, and they're like Volkswagen. So I made like a fake Yugo ad, and I came up with a slogan like, wherever you go, I go. But then I wrote funny things on it like, it'll get you to where you need to go, but that's about it. Car Monthly, you know, where it's like, that's the review, and it's like, it's fine. It works. So I freelanced for a little bit during my time at Netflix doing kind of fake posters for Miles' Room. And I don't know which ones made it in, but I hopefully... There's one I had that was my favorite. It was, what is Sonic the Hedgehog in his world? And I came up with, like, Sonic.
Oh, my gosh.
Sonic the inline hamster.
The name of the restaurant too.
Yeah, I know. I don't even remember the question. I'm so bad at remembering questions.
That's all right.
But hopefully I answered something.
So of the two Spider-Verse movies, the one that we have and the one that's coming out, which is your favorite?
Well, it's yet to be seen. I don't really even know. I was on so early that there wasn't really a concrete story yet. And then when I came back to freelance kind of a year ago, like, my assignments were really specific, so I didn't really get to see what the story was at that time. And then now that I'm back on, the assignments are so crazy and the deadlines are so fast that I'm just, like, fed little portions of, like, hey, in this scene, this happens. Like, can you just do this part of it? So I'm not actually sure. I'm sure that it's going to be great. I know it's going to be crazy. Like, in the first film, we were limited by time and money, and then in this one, it doesn't seem like either of those are... have a limit, so yeah, I think it's going to be awesome. But it's yet to be seen. I don't know. The first one will always hold a very special place in my heart. My son was born during the production of that, so.
Oh, wow, really?
You can see his name in the credits. Kenji. Kenji Sean.
The only downside with the Spider-Verse movies is that there's so much detail in the background I can't see it all.
you got to pause it.
I guess that's a good thing though, in some ways.
Yeah.
Pause frame by frame.
Like, well, everyone's like, okay, there's the Coca-Cola brand, and there's the Sonic. What's next?
Totally. Yeah, that was kind of our mission too on the first one, where it's like you watch a lot of animated films and it, you know, you see the city or you see something and it's like, that kind of looks like an empty city. Like, my favorite animated film of all time is The Incredibles. And, you know, the last scene when they're fighting the giant Omnidroid, they're in a city and it's like, wow, there's like no ads or like bus stops or, you know, signs or restaurants, or it just looks like a kind of a blank city. And that's not, they just didn't have the time or technology to really populate a world like we do now. But that was something where we're like, we want the city to feel real and like lived in and dirty and, you know, full of life and signs and all that stuff. So it was fun to actually put that much detail in it. It had never been done to that point before in an animated film. So it takes a lot of work, though, because everything needs to be designed and everything needs to go through the legal department.
Well, animation does take a while, yeah, from what I can tell.
Yeah, I mean, they've been working on Spider-Verse 2 since 2018.
Wow.
That's like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a long time.
Yeah. They've been working on it for so long that I left after working on it for a year, went to Netflix for 3 years, made 2 seasons of a show, and now I'm back on it, and it's not done.
They need you.
Wow. So on a scale from 1 to 10, how much do you love your job as an animator? What do you enjoy most and least about it?
I'd say, 11. You can go higher than 10. 1,000? I don't know. I think I love this job so much I wouldn't do anything else in the world. Maybe play guitar. But what's my least favorite and my most favorite thing? Is that what the question?
Yeah. I mean, music is still an art.
Yes. That's my other, and that's always my advice to artists, is like, have something else to have, another creative outlet. Like, because if your job is drawing, you know, you don't want to be always drawing, you know. I mean, it's good to draw. I don't know. I always compare it to being like a professional athlete. Like, you should be drawing outside of work. Like, professional athletes work out and they work on their skills outside of playing games, just to stay sharp. But my favorite thing about the job, I guess it's like, it's also my least favorite thing, which is painting. I think Winston Churchill, you guys know Winston Churchill, right? He was a plein air painter. So I don't know if you know plein air painting, but that's painting outside, painting nature from life, like outside in nature. And he said something that, like, he was a painter, so he said he looks at every painting it's a battle, and that every painting is trying to defeat him. And I still feel that way, where every painting I do at the beginning, it's like, oh my God, I'm never going to finish this. This is never going to look good. It's trying to beat me. And then you get to a point, which I call like the turning point, in every painting, where you're like, oh, I think I got it now. Like, I think this is going to be good. And so for me, it's like, it's very, and my wife knows when I'm like in the bad part of the painting still. Cause she's like, she knows that I'm the type of person when I'm in like the bad part of a painting where I'm still trying to figure it out and still trying to think of ways to make it work, where like, it's all I want to do. So like, after we have dinner and after the kids go to bed, like, I'll just go back to my office and I'm like, I'm just trying to figure this out because I don't have it figured out yet. But once I turn that corner and it's like, ooh, I think I have it figured out now. Like, I think this could be a good painting. That's when it becomes like really enjoyable. But there's always that struggle. And I know some people don't have that, but I think I always will. Also, what's my, like, so that's kind of like my favorite and least favorite. My other least favorite would be like, I don't know, maybe dealing with like weird budget issues, you know, where it's like, ooh, sorry, like, this character can't have hair because we already gave 3 characters hair, so, you know, you have to make them bald, you know.
Make him thinning.
Yeah.
I'm sure each project takes a different amount of time to complete. What was your longest or most time-consuming project? Might have already answered this with Spider-Verse.
Spider-Verse, well, I guess I wasn't on Spider-Verse the entire production, so I don't know if that counts. Or Spider-Verse 2.
Yeah.
Spider-Verse 1, I was on it for a little over 2 years, but the longest production I've been on was My Dad the Bounty Hunter for 3 years, like 3 years and 2 months. Yeah. And I'll say the difference between making a series and a feature film are crazy. On a feature film, you'll start making it, and you won't even have a script. You'll start designing stuff. You'll start you know, throwing things on the wall, seeing how they work, pitching that to the directors, and everyone's kind of like building this thing together. On a series, there's no time and there's no money, so everything is written and locked, like the scripts are locked up front. So from a production design standpoint, it's actually really nice because I can just go home with the scripts, make all my notes, plan everything out, and we just execute it. And you just have, like, you don't have as much time, but there's no changes. Whereas on a feature film, you could be designing a set for 3 months, and then they're like, oh, you know what? We cut that from the film, you know? Or, oh, you know what? I know you've been designing, like, a round room, but it has to be triangular now, you know? And it's like, oh, okay. Business. Yeah, so it's a give and take. So on series, there's no time, there's no money, but everything you make gets into the thing. And on film, there's time and money, but not everything you make or everything you design gets into the film.
Like, 1 second they need a yellow fire hydrant, the next second they need it red.
Yeah, totally. And something like that, like, that happens all the time. Where it's like, it was the NYPD. Like, everyone always looked at the NYPD in Spider-Verse as, like, in Miles' world, it's called PDNY. And, like, that was, like, a legal change. So everyone looked at it as, like, oh, that's, like, cool. Like, in his world, it's, like, flipped. But then we designed it as NYPD, and then our legal department says you can't use NYPD unless you use their exact symbols. Like, just legally, we could get sued if you don't do that. So we're like, okay, what if we just swap them? And they're like, well, then it's not the NYPD, so you can do whatever you want. So funny things like that that turn into, like, this thing where it's like, oh, they must have done that because it's an alt-world police department. And it's like, oh, no, we just did it because we didn't want to get sued.
Man. Legal disputes can be turned into massive art projects.
Yeah. Especially on a film like Spider-Verse where there's so many signs and billboards, like, everything has to go through the legal department. So I think on the Yugo ad, my original version said, like, you won't die. You know, like, driving it, like, it won't kill you. And the legal department was like, that's too far. You can't you can't say that. So, like, I had to change it to it'll get you from A to B. But yeah.
It's an interesting ad for a car.
Yeah.
Very interesting. It'll get you to your location, but you might die.
Yeah.
You know.
So what is the workflow for drawing one frame of animation?
So it depends. So there are two types of animated films. There's 2D animation and 3D CG animation. So I could explain the 2D one, and then I could explain the 3D one. I've only worked on 2D a little bit. But 2D is more straightforward. You draw every character and every background in every frame, and you literally draw every part of that character's movement from, you know, for if it's a series, sometimes they do 12 frames a second, but on feature films, like all the classic Disney films, it's 24 drawings per second.
It's a digital flip book.
Exactly. So that's the process for 2D, and you do background designs, and then they put those characters on top of the backgrounds, and then so every time they change the camera angle or move the camera, it's possibly a new background painting. In CG, it's a bit different. You're designing a 3D world. So when you design a set, you design the 3D version of it. So for instance, I designed Aaron's apartment for Spider-Verse. I did five different angles of the entire apartment so that a 3D designer or a 3D modeler can go in after my painting and design this and model the set out in 3D space so that the characters can, who are essentially 3D puppets, can be puppeted through the space. And then those puppet animations, those performances are then, you know, they look kind of crappy when you see like the playback on the animation pass, because there's no lighting and there's no rendering and there's no like fancy rendering techniques. But then after all that stuff is locked and the lighting is designed, so like this painting here is actually a color key or a lighting key. I wish I had it. But like you would see it and it just looks like a bunch of like gray shaded models. And then you draw over it, and you paint over it, and you paint what you want the lighting setup to be. So then, after it's been animated and the camera's been set up, then a lighting artist would go in there and they'd start lighting the set in Maya in 3D. And then that, like, they do that while the animators are animating, and then all of that stuff comes together in the final render, where they render 24 frames a second of this performance that the animators animated, and the set that that was designed by me or someone else, and modeled by the modeling department, and then shot through a digital camera, you know, virtual camera by the layout department, and then all that stuff comes together and goes through a giant render farm, because like one frame of Spider-Verse might take 200 hours to render. But that 200 hours could be spread on a render farm that's just like 1,000 computers. So it might take something like 10 minutes versus, because it's like 200 hours spread across like hundreds of computers.
Okay, I'm starting to understand why this movie's taking 5 years to come out.
Yeah. So that's the process. So the CG process is a lot more complicated than the 2D process. So changes in 3D are a little bit more difficult to do, and you have to do them kind of in order of the pipeline. So if you're seeing a final lit shot in a movie as a director or an art director or production designer, and you say, ooh, I don't like the way his mouth is moving, that's kind of weird. Well, it's like it might be too late because you didn't say it before lighting, you know, and now we're already through lighting and we've already rendered this, and this shot, just like this shot alone has cost us like $200,000. Like, we're not going back to change the animation, so you just got to live with it. Whereas on a 2D thing, it could be a lot simpler. You're just changing the drawings.
Mouth opens like, hello, I am. Or do you want it to like actually have motion?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it, right? Where they'll do this thing too, which is kind of similar to the way that like Leica will do stop motion films, where they'll model out in 3D and they'll squash and stretch the characters' faces for different sounds. So they call those phonemes. So like there's like the oh sound, the p, p, like the s, like all the different phonemes that you'd get, and what they'll do is they'll make a library so that when the animators are animating in Maya, they could start with those mouth shapes. So if like Peter Parker is saying like oh, like they might start with like a regular O and then start to push the eyebrows up and move the mouth and stretch his mouth even more. But they'll start with like a phoneme library so that they don't have to do all that work over and over again.
What was the first animation you ever worked on?
So my first job out of school was, well, it was a thing for a Chinese company that will never get made. But the second thing I worked on was a SpongeBob ride. And it was called SpongeBob the Great Jelly Rescue 4D. SpongeBob 4D the Great Jelly Rescue.
Oh, I think I've actually like seen some footage of that
on YouTube. Yeah, yeah, it was in, I think it was in Vegas somewhere, like some theme park in Vegas or like some hotel, Circus maybe. And then it was also in the Universal Florida, like Orlando theme park.
If only that was here in California.
Yeah. I've never even been on it, and I worked on it.
Perfect.
But yeah, that was my first project. And it was weird. Out of school, my first job was I was an assistant art director on that project. And I get there, and I'm like, okay, cool, who's the art director? And they're like, oh, we don't have one. I was like, so who am I assisting? And they're like, well, you're just the art director.
Who's but, the art director? You.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just, I think it was a way for them to just pay me less. But it was okay. It was my first job, you know, so I took it.
Well, I mean, you do got to dip your toe in the water first.
Yes. But yeah, now, you know, it paid off. It was, it's kind of what got my foot in the door. It was the first time I'd ever been paid to do art versus paying to do art. You know, and I had student loans to pay off, so I'd take the job.
So do you like to draw and create 2D or 3D more? And, well, you kind of already answered this, but which is harder to draw?
They can both be challenging for their own reasons. In 2D, you can cheat a lot of things. You know, like, in a lot of 2D shows that you watch or 2D movies, like, characters will always be at, like, a three-quarter turn to camera. And then when they, like, turn, like, you only see the three quarters. I definitely prefer working in 3D, in CG. I think it's a more robust medium, and you can experiment more with new things, which is my favorite thing to do. So, yeah, 3D. And I've also been getting into, like, 3D modeling myself. I don't know if you guys have ever played around with like the software Blender, but it's free. And the software, the industry standard for 3D software used to be Maya, or it still is Maya for production. But for VisDev artists and concept artists, Maya is really complicated, and there's a really steep learning curve. But Blender is free, one, and Maya is super expensive. And Blender, the interface is really easy to use and really nice. And while you're in the software, it actually looks good. So a lot of VisDev artists and concept artists have started using Blender, including myself. And what we might do is, like, if I was designing this classroom, I might model out, like, a really kind of rudimentary version of this classroom in boxes. So I'd do, like, a box model, and I'd model the walls and model all this stuff. And then I'd take screenshots or, like, I'd move the camera around in Blender and use that as the beginning of my painting. So then I don't have to figure out the perspective and figure out the drawing. And I can show that model to the directors, and I could say, this is the classroom. I mean, it's like a really crappy box model version, but they would say, like, ooh, it needs to have 4 tables instead of 5. So then I could just change that quickly in 3D instead of having to redraw it. And then we can all agree on the space and how big the walls are and how far the tables are from the walls. We could agree on all that before I start spending a ton of time painting it.
So how many years did it take you to get your foot in the door for animating movies and shows? Did you ever feel like giving up?
Yes, all the time. I was lucky. I got a job out of school. Like, I got a job before I graduated.
That's lucky.
But it wasn't, like, my dream job. It wasn't the job that I wanted to do. I wanted to work on feature films. I didn't want to work on TV. I didn't want to work on ride films, which is what that was. So it took about 2 years to get my dream job, and it was a lot of work. It was a lot of looking at my own work very critically and, telling myself, like, well, this isn't good enough. It's got to be better. It took about 2 years to get the job that I wanted. Yeah. I mean, I had a job at the time doing art. It just wasn't exactly what I wanted to do. So I was lucky, and I would go home every night and work on my new portfolio and work on my, painting and drawing skills to improve so that I could get the job at, a feature film studio.
I mean, a job somewhat relating to your passion is still better than a job not relating to your passion.
Yes, that's right.
Like, you worked so hard in college, and you're just like, all right, you're going to organize a shelf.
Yeah, definitely.
If someone just wanted to get into animation, what's your advice?
I think now, early in life, draw. Just draw as much as you can. Have a sketchbook. If you really want to do art for a living and VisDev or art direction or concept art, just drawing is the number one skill.
Way ahead of you.
Nice. So, yeah, draw from life. Go to figure drawing classes if you can. Do painting, and I think a lot of it, do it traditionally, don't use the computer. Just get good at drawing, and then the computer stuff will just make it easier from there. So it's like when I taught guitar lessons, it's like, hey, let's play acoustic first, we'll learn some chords, learn the fundamentals, and then we'll plug into an amp and we'll start messing with, different tones and sound effects and all that fun stuff.
Switching things up, we saw on your website that you're also a part-time magician. Do you have a favorite magician or trick?
That's just a joke. I don't know why I said that. I look at the format of, like, everyone's websites, and I always think it's, like, weird how everyone talks about themselves in the third person. So they say, like, oh, Yuki Demers lives in Southern California, and he loves walking his dog and going to the beach and rock climbing and that kind of stuff. Where it's, like, so in my website, it's kind of a joke. where it's like, I don't know, I said I'm a part-time magician, but maybe it's more of like a metaphor where, like, every once in a while in work I have to, like, pull off something magical. If you read my bio, it says, like, Yuki is an artist that lives in Southern California and enjoys writing about himself in the third person.
So, we actually spent, like, a couple of minutes writing questions just for this magic thing.
Oh, yeah, go for it. I was in the magic club in eighth grade, so.
Well,
I do
that's
have
good enough.
I guess my favorite magic trick, it's probably the only magic trick I can do, is you hold the deck of cards, and I run my thumb through it, and you guys have to tell me when to stop, and then wherever I stop, I can tell you what your card is when you get it. But that's the only magic trick I know.
Congratulations.
I'm curious to hear that magic question now, though.
So I wonder, if in eighth grade, did you consider magic an art form?
I think magic is an art form. Yeah, sleight of hand, misdirection, all that fun stuff.
Okay, so you look away, and I'm going to pull a card out of my shirt.
Yeah.
Magic.
Yeah, there's not the same career opportunities for magicians, though.
Let me pull a rabbit out of my hat.
Unless you like kids' birthday parties.
Well, there's a passion for someone out there.
Yeah.
So, Yuki, thank you so much for joining us today. Is there anything else you would like to share before we go on to our studio audience for questions?
Yeah, I think my big thing was, like, I didn't know that you could make a living doing art. And, yeah, it's there. This job exists. Pretty good money, you know? I would say really good money, if you're lucky. My parents both thought I'd be, like, you know, a starving artist, but, you know, not to brag, but I'm doing better than all my siblings. So take that. It's great. Look into careers in art earlier, and you could get a head start. Not like me, where, like, I didn't even start studying art until, like, 3 years into junior college and, like, a failed metal band.
All right, I wonder what I want to do 3 years later.
Yeah.
I got it!
You know, sometimes you need that time, though, and that's why, my parents were kind of upset that I didn't go straight to a UC school out of high school, but I just didn't know what I wanted to do, so I didn't want to waste the money, you know, until I knew what I wanted.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is pretty good. smart.
Yeah.
So any questions or comments from the audience?
Hi, I'm Bree. So earlier you talked about how you listen to your favorite albums while you're working to get in the zone. So what are your favorite albums?
Okay. It depends. I listen to a lot of, like, 2010 metal. There's a band called Killswitch Engage, which is really great, that I love. I'll listen to them a lot. But recently I've been listening to this band called Polyphia. And they kind of evolved from metal and kind of like math metal into like this weird kind of like hip-hop metal guitar hybrid. And that's really interesting to me. I also just listen to a lot of like old stuff, you know? like Led Zeppelin and I guess Metallica's old now. but yeah, I kind of listen to everything. And a project that I might be going on soon has a lot of hip-hop and rap stuff. So I'll just like ask my friends who are more into hip-hop and rap, like, hey, I'm like new to this. What should I listen to? So I'm kind of going through that right now. Listening to Tupac and, you know, NWA and figuring out that stuff. But yeah, I like all kinds of music.
Thank you.
You should ask how many hours a week I have to work. Yeah, more.
How many more?
How many more? Oh, are we, is this a real question?
Sure.
It depends. As production designer, it can be, you know, kind of a short week sometimes, maybe like 36, 40 hours. I guess that's a short week.
Wow.
And towards the end of the project, when there's not a lot of artwork to do and you're just kind of waiting for shots to come back from your vendor and just to give notes, like it's, there's a lot more downtime, but, in, like, crunch mode on Spider-Verse, it could be, like, 70 hours a week.
Wow.
But that's, like, that's not for very long. That's maybe, like, a month, 2 months maybe. That's, like, wake up, do art, eat lunch, do art, eat dinner, do art, go to sleep. Wake up, do it again, 5 days, sometimes 6 days a week.
Wow. If that's not very long. I'm trying to think what long is.
Yeah. Well, I guess 40 hours is the standard, 40 hours a week. And that's what I always tell students, like, if you're trying to get into the industry and you're trying to basically become a VizDev artist, like, VizDev artists are already doing 40 hours of art training a week and they're getting paid to do it. So you should be doing more than that if you want to get better than them and take their jobs.
Wow. Again, thank you so much, Yuki, for talking with us today. And a big thanks to all our listeners and followers. I'm Lila
with Noel, signing off.